It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From its stem, all forms of spiritual disease, for we've been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So the first thing we're going to do is look at these resentments. Now, I think we need to look at that word and make sure we understand what it means. The word resentment is made from two old words. First are the letters R-E. Re. When you see re in front of another word, it always means to do again. Like repaint, replay, redo, always means to do again. The last part of this word, sentiment, comes from an old word called sentire, which means to feel. So the word resentment itself means to re-feel. Okay. Let's say we're going through life, which we do on a daily basis, remembering always that everybody has got self-will. That's one of the problems. It's standard equipment. Everybody's got self-will. From time to time, other people get sick in self. Maybe their social instinct is out of kilter. Maybe their security instinct or their sex instinct is fouled up. And they do something to me that threatens one of my basic instincts of life. Maybe they put me down in the eyes of other people, and it threatens my self-esteem. Maybe they do something to threaten one of my personal relationships. Maybe they rip me off and steal my money from me. Maybe they do something to interfere with my sex life. Or maybe they do something that threatens one of my ambitions for the future. Now, when they do that, that's a wrong on their part for doing so. That's not a resentment. It doesn't become a resentment till I go over in the next room. Or I go home that evening. And I replay that thing in my mind. And I feel the pain the second time. The first time they did it to me hurt me. But when I go over here and replay it and feel the pain the second time, then I'm doing it to myself now. They did it to me the first time, but I'm doing it the second time. And after a while, I'll replay it again. And I'll feel the pain the third time. And what I found in my life is I'm not always completely honest with me. Because it seems as though when I replay this thing, each time I tend to change it just a little bit. And I tend to make what they did to me just a little bit worse. I tend to make what I did just a little bit less. I tend to make the pain just a little bit deeper. And you let me play it over in my head enough times, after a while I can say to myself, I was just standing there doing nothing. And they come along and did it to me. I love to watch football games. And in a football game, you'll see a guy called a quarterback that sometimes will throw a pass. And the guy that's supposed to receive it, many times it's thrown up high on purpose so the other guys can't catch it. And the guy that's going to receive it, several many times, has to jump way up in the air to catch it. Now, the members of the opposing team, they have learned that if you can hit this guy while he's still up in the air, before he really gets good control of that ball, you can knock it loose from him. So they wait until he jumps up in the air, and when that ball touches his fingers, they knock the hell out of him. Now he's completely defenseless now. And they'll hit him, and sometimes it'll just turn him upside down. He'll fall on his head, his neck bends sideways, his legs spread apart, One arm bends completely behind his back, and it just hurts the hell out of him. And you can see that he's hurt. Now, the football game, though, is like the game of life. It's going to go on. They're not going to stop it very long. One or two things will happen with this guy. They'll run out there and check him over, and if he isn't hurt too bad, they'll pump a little air in him and get him up and get him going again. If he's hurt too bad, they'll drag him off to the side, they'll put somebody in his place, and the game starts again. The football game is going to continue. I don't care what's happened. Now, the announcer up in the booth, though, he's got a resentment machine. Because after a while, he'll say, "Let's look at that again." And this time, it is in slow motion and living color. My God, it looks twice as bad as it did the first time. You can see how far his neck really did bend, how far his legs spread apart, and how badly that arm was bent. And it looks twice as bad as it did the first time. After a while, the announcer will say, "Let's look at that again." The game's been going on now for 15 minutes. The announcer's still bouncing this guy up and down, up and down, up and down off the ground. Now, we alcoholics have up here in our heads a little resentment replay machine. And we get up in the mornings and we toot it up in living color. We clean the lens on it because we don't want to miss nothing. And we shine it on the world all day long. And we record everything they do to us that's bad. And we go home at night and sit down and play it over in our head and make ourselves sick and blame it on them. Now, once in a while, we have a bad day. Once in a great while, they won't do anything to us.
That's a bad day for an alcoholic.
We've got our machine cleaned up, the lens is clean, tuned up, we're shining it on the world, and nobody will do anything to us. We don't have anything bad to record.
Don't record nothing good.
Do you know what we record those days? By God, we record what they're thinking. That's what we do. We go home at night, play it over in our head, make ourselves sick. Now, there's a bad thing about a resentment. Because each time you play it over your head, each time you throw it out there, after a while, it turns around, it comes back at you. And when it comes back at you, it comes back as self-resentment. And we begin to resent ourselves for being in a position to have those things happen to us. And after a while, self-resentment turns to self-pity. And that's the sickest that a human being can be up here in their head, is to be filled with self-pity. And we alcoholics love self-pity. We like to get up early in the morning, put self-pity on as a cloak of dignity, and as we go out the door, we say, "Here I come, mean old world, just do it to me. I know you're going to get me because you always do." It is a sick way to build our self-esteem. Because after all, if the whole world is picking on us, we must really be somebody. And my God, we love that self-pity. If you want an alcoholic mad, if you want to make them mad, you try to feel sorry for one of us. And we'll tell you in a hurry, "Don't you feel sorry for me. That's my damn job, you know." Is there any way that God can enter a mind filled with that kind of crap? No way. Our thinking is controlled and dominated by these resentments and all the things that go along with it. God is absolutely, completely blocked out of our mind through these resentments. At the very least, we're going to have to do something about them. Now, the instructions on how to do them are here in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, are just so simple that we never could see them before. We've given you a sheet in your handout material called A Review of Resentments. I believe that's page 9 and 10. And what I would ask you to do now is take those last two columns, try to fold them over where you can't even see them. where all you're looking at is column 1, 2, and 3. The example on page 65 has already been filled out. And we didn't know the procedure that Bill used to fill it out. That's where a lot of our confusion is. So what we've given to you in the first three columns is page 65 in the blank form. We want to emphasize we're not trying to bring another inventory in AA. We've already got enough of those. Page 65, the resentment sheet that you have is 65 in the blank form. Column 1, I'm resentful at. Column 2 is the cause. Column 3 affects my. Now let's see if we can't find the instructions on how to fill it out. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Okay, you've got the paper now, and we're going to start setting them down.
You know, we're always taught to read from left to right. And if you read from left to right and trying to figure out the inventory on page 65, you would start with Mr. Brown, and you'd write down the resentment, and then you'd change your mind and go to the second column and write down the cause. Then you change your mind again and go to what part of self was affected, and you have to use those basic instincts of life and try to write down what part of self was affected. Then you'd go back to the first column mentally and write down Mrs. Jones. And then you'd change your mind again and go to the second column. Well, you get the idea. If you do that long enough, if you have a mind like mine, it says tilt. It's just too much information. And I say, well, what the hell? All they wanted was a life story anyhow. So I just disregard this. Well, we didn't know how to fill out this column. It seems to us that you fill this out one column at a time from top to bottom, leaving a little space in between the names in column 1. So you'll fill that in over in column 2 and a little bit later. Because our book said that we listed people, institution, or principle with whom we are angry, period. From top to bottom in column 1, we would simply write down all the people, principles, or institution with whom we are angry from top to bottom, leaving a little space between each one of them all the way down.
People, that's self-explanatory. Institutions are those things such as the police department, the Internal Revenue Service, the federal government, the church, etc. Principles are those old guiding, I hate to use the word laws, but it's the only thing I can think of, natural laws that's interfered with our style of living. The Ten Commandments, that's a set of principles. And when I was out there drinking, I don't want to hear nothing about the Ten Commandments. I'm breaking all of them but one, and maybe I broke it in a blackout too, I don't know. Another old principle that I always hated said, what goes up must come down. I never cared for that one. Another one said, what you give out is what you get back. Another one said, there are no free rides. You'll pay for whatever you get. And my dad used to say, when you lay down with dogs, you'll get fleas on you every time. Those old principles that interfered with our style of living. Now, you don't need to be sober very long to do this. All we got to do is take these things out of our head, put them down on paper. You don't have to have a high education to do this. If you can't write, you feed the names to somebody else and let them write them down. And while our mind is on one thing and one thing only, let's fill out the first column from top to bottom. I've never seen an alcoholic yet that did not know just who and what by God we're mad at. We spend thousands of hours sitting around in bars talking about it. All we got to do is take it out of our head, put it down on a piece of paper, and we would have completed the first instruction. And hopefully, the same thing will happen to you that happened to me when I did this. They came to me and they said, list your resentments. And I said, I don't have any. And they said, surely you got one or two. Maybe you don't understand what the resentment is. And they explained to me that it was to refill old pains and old hurts. And I said, oh yeah, I got a couple of those. They said, put them on paper. Leave a little space in between each one. So I got a sheet of paper, and leaving space between, like the book does, first thing I knew, I had about eight names on that sheet of paper. And I reached over and got another sheet of paper. And after a while, I had eight more listed. And I got another sheet of paper, and Next thing you know, I had eight more listed, and I got another sheet of paper. I got up to about 152. And I said, man, you're madder than hell at everything. I did not know that. You can only see one resentment at a time in your head. I don't think any of us will ever see how many resentments we really do have and how much they control and dominate our thinking till we get them all down on a sheet of paper and see them in their entirety for the first time. Now, we've made a decision to let God direct our thinking. And if we've got that many resentments, then resentments direct our thinking and God can't. And it's just that simple. Just by the listing of the names, we learn something very valuable about ourselves. How resentful we really are. You just can't see this stuff in your head. It has to go on paper. So we filled out the first column. Now Bill said, Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, my employer, and my wife. He probably had more than that. I think he just didn't want to use any more space in the big book. Mine was that long, long list of about 152 names, Joe.
So we ask why we were angry, period. Stop right there and go to the second column, the cause. Now, he used here, very short and sweet, just four or five little words, not too many words to describe the cause. Simplicity is the key here in the second column. Now, he's resentful at Mr. Brown. Why? His attentions to my wife. He told my wife of my mistress. Brown may get my job at the office. Now, I don't even know Mr. Brown. I'm already mad at him myself. Now, he's resentful at Miss Jones because she's a nut. She snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend, and she's a gossip. What she did was put his old drinking buddy in the nut house, and he don't like that at all. Now, he's mad at his employer. Why? Well, he's unreasonable and unjust and overbearing.
Probably said, say, Bill, by the way, where were you all day yesterday anyhow?
He threatens to fire me for drinking and padding my expense account.
That's unreasonable as hell, isn't it?
Yeah, very narrow-minded. Now, he's really mad at his wife. She misunderstands and nags, and she likes old Brown. And she wants the house put in her name.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You tie that together, liking old Brown, wanting the house put in her name, it's about time to get a little bit upset, isn't it? So simply in the second column, we just write down, we ask ourselves why we were angry beside each name one at a time, using four or five little words to describe the cause. There may be one cause or there may be two or three causes, but we simply write them down in the second column.
We're not going to write any big long essays.
No.
Just a few simple words by each name. And it may be one cause or there may be multiple causes as we have here. Whatever it is, we put it down. I filled out the second column, and I began to realize something that's become very valuable to me. I began to realize it's not the people and the institutions that I'm upset with. It's what they've done to me that's got me upset. You know, I can take Mr. Brown out of here and put Mr. Green in. I'll be just as upset with Green as I am with Brown if he does the same thing to me. I could take Mrs. Jones out of here and put Mrs. Smith in. If Smith does the same thing, I'm going to be just as upset with her as I am with Jones. Well, I could take my wife out of here and put my mistress in. And if she does the same thing, I'll be just as upset with her. I begin to realize it's not them that's got me upset. It's what they've done to me that's got me upset. Now, the reason that's valuable is because of this. I'm getting ready to start out on a lifetime-changing process to develop the best possible relationship that I can with the world and everybody in it so I can have maximum peace of mind and serenity. A part of that relationship is a little later on in my program, I'm going to have to go to a bunch of people and ask them to forgive me for what I've done to them. By the same token, I'm going to have to forgive others for what they've done to me. And a part of that forgiving process can start right here. When I begin to realize it's not them, it's what they've done that's got me upset, that starts getting names out of the way. And it's going to make it a lot easier to handle this in the future. So I filled out two columns now. Number one, I learned how resentful I really am, how much that blocks me from God. And number two, I've learned it's not them I resent. It's what they've done to me that I actually resent. Two valuable things. Now let's look at the third column.
In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, or our personal or sex relations which have been interfered with? We were usually definite as this example. And again, using that information that we got from the basic instincts of life, we said, simply fill out the third column, what part of self was affected by that? What basic instinct was threatened by the actions that those people did?
I can't be upset with you unless you've done something to threaten one of these basic instincts of life. If you threaten my social instinct in any way, my self-esteem, my personal relations, etc., you're going to upset me and make me angry. If you threaten my security, either material or emotional, you're going to upset me and make me angry. If you threaten my sex life in any way, you're going to upset me and make me angry. And as I begin to fill out the third column and put down the part of self that is affected, in most cases I begin to see a pattern develop. Maybe beside each name I'm putting down self-esteem. Maybe I begin to see my main problem is self-esteem. Maybe I'm putting down security. Maybe I see where my main problem deals with security. Maybe I'm putting something under sex each time. I begin to realize that the sex thing is my main problem. I begin to see which part of self really does stand out. Probably going to be a combination of all three. But I can certainly see which part of self really does predominate and stand out when I keep seeing it appear over and over and over and over again. When I filled out the third column, here's where I've learned something that I think is the most valuable thing I ever learned about me. As I filled out the third column for the first time in my life, I could see where anger comes from. I've always had a problem with anger. I've always acted and reacted with anger. I would do something that would hurt other people. I would be ashamed of it. I'd say, I'll never do that again. I'll turn right around, get angry, do it all over again. You can't do anything about a problem till you understand the problem. I never did understand where anger come from. I always thought it was just one of those feelings that flitted into your mind. You could do nothing about it. Today I realize that anger comes from a threat to one of these basic instincts of life. Now, if my basic instincts are under control at the level that God intended, if my relationship with God is okay, you can do about anything you want to me, and I'm not going to experience anger over it. But I'll guarantee you, if my instincts are out of control, my relationship with God is not right, about anything you do to me that threatens a basic instinct creates anger. And I romp and stomp and raise hell with you and everybody around you. You know, this lady that I'm married to today, hopefully I can introduce you to her tomorrow. She's here with us this weekend. A beautiful lady named Barbara. If there's any such thing as a black belt Al-Anon, she's one of them. She's got now about 31 or 32 years in the Al-Anon Fellowship. Great, great program. But Barbara is like all human beings. She has self-will too. Now, once in a great while, she'll get sick himself. Al-Anons do that once in a while. Not too often, but once in a while. And she'll do something that threatens one of my basic instincts of life. And when she does it, it hurts. Now, I found that if my relationship with God is right and my instincts are at the level God intended, I'm able to say, well, the poor old thing. They're sick just like we are, and they can't help it any more than we can, and that thing will just slide off of my back and just won't bother me at all. And I just go on about my business. Now, 30 days later, though, the same lady does the same thing. Only this time, my instincts are not under control. And my relationship with God's not right today. And I react to what she did with anger. And I romp and I stomp and I raise hell with Barbara and everybody around me all day long. The same lady did the same thing. But I choose to react to it in an entirely different manner, based upon my relationship with God and where my instincts are that day. Thank God I've learned that. Because you see, I can't do anything about Barbara. And I can't do anything about any other human being on earth. But I can do something about my relationship with God and keeping my instincts under control where I don't have to get angry. And if I don't have to get angry, I'm in much less chance of drinking than I am if I just continue that anger over and over and over. Thank God I've learned that. One of the best pieces of information I ever found. Now, we have filled out three columns. Column one, we listed the people we're angry with, resentful at, and we realized how resentful we really are and how much that blocks us off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Column two, we've learned it's not them we're resentful at, it's what they've done to us. Column three, we've learned it's not even what they've done to us. It's how we choose to react to it based on our relationship with God and whether our instincts are under control or not. Now, we're going to fill out a couple names here from our inventories. We're not going to do the whole thing, but just two or three names as an example. The first name on my sheet was this lady named Barbara. 30-some-odd years ago, I hated this lady with a purple passion. If I could have done away with her and not get caught, I believe I would have done it. I used to lay awake at night fantasizing about this thing. Tomorrow morning, when she's on the way to work, and by the way, she always worked, I believed in her being self-supporting through her own contributions. Always thinking of others. Tomorrow morning when she's on her way to work, she's going to get run over by a big semi-truck. And it's not going to be just any trucking company. It's going to be a very affluent trucking company. And they're going to run over her and kill her, and then I'm going to sue them. And I'm going to come out of this deal getting rid of her with $2 or $3 million in hand. You Al-Anons are not the only ones that fantasize. We Alkies did it too. Believe me, we did. Second name on my sheet was the Internal Revenue Service. God, I hated those people with a purple passion. Just mention their name, and I begin to froth at the mouth immediately. Joe, what was the first name on your inventory sheet?
Rose.
Rose. The wife number one, Rose. Now, it's just that simple. That's how you fill out the first column. We go to the second column. Why am I so upset with Barbara? Well, the last year before she went to Al-Anon, she had the audacity to file for divorce 3 times. She's spending more money on lawyers and divorces than I'm spending on booze and everything that goes with it. And my God, I hated her for that. Why am I so upset with the Internal Revenue Service? Well, they're trying to put me in jail, that's why. Joe, how come you're so upset with Rose?
She had an affair with another man. After all I've done to her. I mean, after all I've done to her.
Had an affair with another man. Really upset with her. Now we go to the third column. Now, Barbara filing for divorce 3 times, is that a threat to my self-esteem? Oh, you betcha. What are other people going to think about me now? Taking this lady back after she's filed for divorce 3 times. Barbara filing for divorce 3 times, is that a threat to my personal relationships? Sure it is. She's going to take the kids and she's going to leave, or they're going to kick me out, one of the two. No personal relationships. Her filing for divorce three times, is that a threat to my security?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, by the time she's through, she'll have it all. Don't worry about that. Is it a threat to my sex life?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she probably won't let me have any sex if we get a divorce. Internal Revenue Service trying to put me in jail. Is that a threat to my self-esteem? What are people going to think about me after this deal's over with? Is it a threat to my personal relationships? They're not going to let me have any relationship with my wife and children if I'm in jail. Is it a threat to my security? Oh, yeah, they're going to take every penny I've got by the time it's over with. Is it a threat to my sex life? The kind I'd like to have, you betcha it's a threat to it. Now, there may be some in there I don't want, but... Old Rose having an affair with another man. Is that a threat to Joe's self-esteem? Is it a threat to his personal relationships? It's a threat to his security? Yeah, he'll have to go to work now. She's been supporting him for the last 10 years. A threat to his sex life? Oh, yeah. All these things are a threat to those things. Okay. When we have finished out these three columns, and we've been able to see, column one, how many resentments we have, column two, the cause of the resentment, column three, the part of self that was affected, and we've learned valuable information about ourselves just by filling out those three sheets. Now then, let's see what we do with those three sheets after they're filled out, Joe.
So we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was far as most of ever got. And I always knew that. Yeah. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us, and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Now, it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to fertility and happiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours which might have been worthwhile.
And I read that last statement, and I stopped, and I tried to look back in my life and see how much time I've squandered in resentments. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I know about me. And when I've got a good resentment churning around up here in my head, I'm pretty well paralyzed from doing anything worthwhile. And one of my favorite things that I was doing back when I was drinking was to get up early in the morning, have a drink of whiskey and a cup of coffee, and turn on my resentment replay machine and replay what she did to me yesterday and replay what that guy did to me a month ago and replay what that person said to me 6 months ago and replay what that damn boss did to me about a year ago. And replay what that damn policeman did to me 5 years ago. And replay what my uncle did to me 10 years ago. And replay what my mother did to me 15 years ago. And replay what my father did to me 20 years ago. And it took me just about an hour to run through that tape. And I loved every moment of it. When that tape would run out, I'd have another drink of whiskey and another cup of coffee. And I would turn on my get-even machine. Now, by God, the next time she does that, I'll do this and she'll do that and socko, I'll put it on her. They're not going to treat me that way. And it took me just about an hour to run through that tape. And I loved every moment of it. When I came into AA, I found out the only difference was I wasn't taking the drink of whiskey. I was having a cup of coffee, turn on the resentment replay machine, run it for an hour. Another cup of coffee, turn on the get even machine, run it for an hour. I have spent literally thousands and thousands and thousands of hours in resentments. And as far as I can tell, they've never done me any good whatsoever. They certainly never made me any money. They never made me feel better. They only made me feel worse. They never straightened up a relationship with another human being. It only made them worse and worse and worse. And as far as I can tell, that was absolute, complete, wasted time. Now, as a human being, I really believe today that I'm allotted just so much time to be here on earth. And I'm beginning to approach the end of mine. And for the first time in my life, not only am I sober, but I am peaceful, happy, and free. For the first time in my life, I'm sober and I feel great. I didn't know that you could be sober and feel as good as I feel today. What little time that I have left, I want to enjoy every moment of it. I don't want to waste any more time in resentments or anything else that blocks me off from God. I want to enjoy every moment of every day that I've got left. I simply do not intend to waste any more time in resentments. They block you off from God. They block you off from your fellow man. They just make you sicker and sicker and sicker. And what time we spend in them is an absolute waste of time. That's one of the worst things about a resentment. Wasting what time we have left in resentments. But that's not the worst thing. Here's the worst thing about a resentment.
He said, but with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns when we drink again. And with us to drink is to die.
That's the worst thing about a resentment. When we've got a good resentment churning around in our head, we don't feel good. We're blocked off from God. And after a while, the mind, wanting to feel better, begins to think about the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a couple of drinks. Next thing you know, we become insane. We convince ourselves it's okay to drink. And we end up taking a drink and we trigger the allergy and we end up drunk all over again. That's the worst part about a resentment. The book says if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turn back to the list. You see, this is why you got to have a written inventory. If you had it in your head, you would have lost it already. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Always before, I looked at it to see what those suckers had done to me. Today, I would look at it to see what that resentment is doing to me. And if it's blocking me off from God and maybe causing me to get drunk, then I'm looking at it from an entirely different angle. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. And I stopped and I said, "Hart, Charlie, how dumb can you be? All my life, I've been proud of the fact that I stand on my own two feet. Nobody tells me what to do. I don't need your advice, thank you." And I suddenly realized that other people, through my resentment toward them, have controlled and dominated my thinking as far back as I can remember. And if they've controlled and dominated my thinking, they've controlled and dominated my actions, they have absolutely, completely controlled and dominated my entire life for me. I always thought I was in charge, but I suddenly realized other people have been in charge as far back as I can remember through my resentments toward them. And then I said, man, you really are stupid, aren't you? Because some of these people have been dead and buried in a graveyard for years. And they've been reaching out from the grave and they've had me by the yang-yang as far back as I can remember. And when I saw that, I said, to hell with them. I'm not going to let those people, alive or dead, live in my head rent-free any longer. I've made a decision to let God direct my thinking. And if others direct it, alive or dead, justified or unjustified, then God can't. And it's just that simple. And an amazing thing happened to me right here. We alcoholics fancy ourselves as reasonably intelligent people. Now, I don't know that we're smarter than anybody else, but I think we're reasonably intelligent people. And we don't like to look stupid. And when I saw the stupidity of letting those people control me and dominate me, it looked so dumb that about 95% of these resentments began to disappear automatically when I saw how stupid that really was. But I found that I had four or five or six that were so deeply embedded in my mind for so long that they didn't automatically disappear when I saw the stupidity behind them. And for those, I had to have some additional help. We now come to the first prayer in the big book in step four. We always hear about the step three prayers, the step seven prayers. We never hear about the step four prayers. Let's see how we can use prayer to remove those deep, deep-seated resentments.
He said, how could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So you can't heal a sick wine with a sick mind. You can't wish your way out of it. Well, this was our course. We realized that the people who had wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. It's part of the prayer. We asked God to help us to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. And I'm like Charlie. I spent many, many years in my life, many hours of my life thinking. My mind was racing uncontrollably, figuring out some way I could get even with those people. And I finally figured out a way to get even with them. Well, the way you get even with people is you pray for them. And when you pray for them, then you're even. And you see, I didn't know that. And after I got sober, I'd been sober about 3 or 4 months, I went to a little conference in Apache, Oklahoma, and I met a lady there, some of you know. Her name was Alabam Carruthers. Some of you all knew Alabam. She became a big influence on my life. And she said a couple of things that night that really struck me. She said she had a soul sickness, and I could identify with that. Because my last night of drinking, I was sitting on a bar stool, and I had a real sick feeling in my stomach. And it wasn't a throwing up type sick, it was sick feeling. And she said it was a soul sickness. I said, that's what I had, a soul sickness. And then she said another thing that night. She said, I have peace of mind today. And boy, I mean, that really struck me. Because that's all I'd ever wanted was peace of mind. And I loved Alabama. She was always excited about life and what was going to happen next. And then after that meeting was over with, we were sitting around the lobby of this hotel. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was sitting there watching Alabama operate. And it wasn't saying anything. Finally, it was just Alabama and myself and my little sponsor, George. A little black guy laying in her lap. And I began to talk to Alabama. I said, Alabama, you said you had peace of mind tonight. How did you get peace of mind? I want peace of mind. And she said, well, Joe, tell me what's going on in your mind. And I told her how I was going to meetings and going to meetings and going to meetings. But that night I'd go home and lay down and my mind would fly over and I'd begin to think about all those situations that we talked about. And she said, well, Joe, you're just full of resentments. And I said, what is a resentment? See, I didn't know. She said a resentment was old angers and old hurts that are refelt over and over and over again. And all that anger that you intended to use up on them, you're turning it on yourself and making yourself sick and blaming it on them. She explained that to me, and it took a while for me to understand. Finally, I did. And I said, well, is there any solutions for these? And she said, yes, there is. This happens to be. And she referred to page 67 and showed me this information here. And she said, some of those deep-seated resentments like you have, you're going to need some additional help. And she said on page 551 of this book is a story of a lady who had those deep-seated resentments. If you would turn to that page in the book, she said, we'll read and see what they had to say. Well, Alabama had a purse that was about this big, and it was about that deep, and she began to look at that purse. You know how they are. They're digging around. And she finally found this one of these books. I didn't think she'd ever going to find it. She pulled it out of there, and she said, well, let's look at page 551 and see what this says. So I turned over page 551 in her book, and on the third paragraph, she said, this book says that I've had many spiritual experiences since I've been in the program, many that I didn't recognize right away, for I'm slow to learn, and they take many guises. But one was so outstanding, I like to pass it on whenever I can in the hope that it will help someone else as it helped me. As I said earlier, self-pity and resentment were my constant companions, and my inventory began to look like a 33-year diary, for I seemed to have a resentment against everybody I'd ever known. All but one responded to the treatment suggested in the steps immediately.
All but one automatically began to disappear when she saw how dumb they really were.
But this one posed a problem. It was against my mother, and it was 25 years old. I had fed it, fanned it, and nurtured it as one might a delicate child. And it had become as much a part of me as my breathing. Now, he had provided me with my excuses for my lack of education, my marital failures, personal failures, inadequacies, and, of course, my alcoholism. And though I really thought I'd been willing to part with it now, I knew I was reluctant to let it go. One morning, however, I realized I had to get rid of it, for my reprieve was running out. And if I didn't get rid of it, I was going to get drunk, and I didn't want to get drunk anymore. In my prayers that morning, I asked God to point out to me some way to be free of this resentment. During the day, a friend of mine brought me some magazines to take to a hospital group I was interested in. And I looked through them, and a banner across the front of one featured an article by a prominent clergyman in which I caught the word resentment. Now, he said, in effect, and here it is. He said, if you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you will pray for the person or the thing that you resent, you will be free. If you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them and your prayers are only words and you don't mean it, go ahead and do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks and you'll find that you come to mean it and want it for them. And that you will realize that where you used to feel bitterness, resentment, and hatred, you now feel compassion, understanding, and love. Well, I went home after that meeting, and I got in my bed that Sunday night, lay down, and my old mind flipped over again and started racing uncontrollably. And I said, well, I think I'll pray for those people. So I started praying for those people that night, and my list got longer. The next day, I prayed for those people again. And that afternoon, I prayed for those people. And that night, I prayed for those people. And I don't know how long it went on. It was 2 or 3 weeks or more. I don't know. But it seemed like I was in constant prayer for day and night, praying for those people. I don't know exactly what happened, but I do know that one morning, it was one of the beautiful spring mornings we have in Oklahoma, and I got stuck in this stoplight. Just the length of a stoplight is what happened. I looked over at that beautiful house sitting over there, and the grass was so green, it was just beautiful. The greenest green I'd ever seen. The tulips were in full bloom, red and yellow. The little squirrels were in the trees, and the birds were in the trees whistling, and it's just a beautiful morning. And I thought to myself, my God, how long has it been since I've seen that? You know, I could not remember. I could not remember. And when this book talks about being cut off from the sunlight of the Spirit, I really do know what that means. I really do. Because that morning it was so vivid. Now what happened was that those people did not change. But my thoughts and feelings toward them did change, you see. And has never returned again. Thank God for this program called Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been there and I don't want to ever return again.
I think the reason this works so well is prayer for another human being. Prayer for their welfare and their happiness. It's probably one of the greatest expressions of love that one human being can have for another. And love and hate can't exist on the same plane. And as we pray for that human being, asking that God give them in their life the same thing we want in ours, peace of mind, serenity, happiness, etc., over a period of time, that resentment will begin to disappear. Sometimes it just takes two or three prayers. Sometimes it takes every day for 2 weeks. Sometimes it might take every day for 2 months. But if we will consistently do it, we will find sooner or later that that resentment is replaced with love. And the resentment disappears. Now, if you've got a resentment that you don't want to get rid of, for God's sake, don't pray about them. Because if you do, you're going to lose it. I know. I speak from experience. You know, I had a guy that I really, really, really resented. And again, I think I would gladly have put him away if I could have gotten by with it without getting caught. And when I got to this part of the inventory, I went to my sponsor. Now, this is going to be one of those take-it-to-the-grave resentments. I had no desire to remove it at all. And I'd worked on all the others, but this one just stuck in there. And I went to my sponsor and I told him about it. And he said, "Charlie, you've got to get rid of that resentment." And I said, "I don't want to get rid of this resentment." He said, "Well, that's beside the point." He said, "If you don't get rid of it, sooner or later it's going to get you drunk." And in my smart mouth and my head, I said, "Well, how in the hell do I do it?" And he said, "Let me show you." And he took me to this prayer too. And he said, "Now read that and go home and do what it says. And you'll get rid of that resentment." And I went home and got down on my knees, which again I very seldom did in those days. And I said, "God, I want you to give that son of a bitch everything he deserves." And that's the only prayer I had for him that day. And I prayed again and again and again, and 3 or 4 or 5 days later, I don't know when, I found myself saying something I didn't really mean to say. I found myself saying, "God, give him in his life what I want in mine. The same peace of mind, serenity, and happiness that I seek for myself." And 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 days later, I don't know when, I woke up one morning and that resentment was gone, completely gone. And it's never returned since that date. And I think the irony in the whole situation is it wasn't 30 days later. This guy moved in as my next door neighbor. This thing really does work.
See, what I learned from this experience is that love is forgiving, and love is forgiving, you see.
Now just think, this old head up here, that these display cases over here were filled with resentments, has now been emptied out. The resentments, the damaged and unsaleable goods called resentment, has now been removed from my mind. Now, when that happens to me, there's another natural law that applies that says nature abhors a vacuum. No such thing as a vacuum or a void. There's always something trying to rush in and fill it up. If those resentments disappear, God's not going to leave another hole in my head. I've got enough of those already. They will have to be replaced with something else. And the only thing that can replace them will be the opposite of them. Where my mind used to be filled with resentments, that portion of it is now filled with love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill toward my fellow man. That's God's thinking. My thinking was the resentment. God's thinking is love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill. And that part of my mind is now filled with God's thinking. You see, there's nothing negative here at all. This is a positive happening. In part of my mind, I've now got peace of mind, serenity, and happiness. Much less chance of drinking now than I was when I started the inventory process. And what really blew my mind is this. I didn't have to go to any other fellowships, and I didn't have to read any other books to find love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill. If God dwells within me, and my book says He does, then that's always been a part of my makeup. I just never could use it before. In my chase for money, power, prestige, sex, and what I thought were the good things of life, Those thoughts had to be repressed to let me operate on the level I wanted to operate on. But now that resentments are gone, they automatically come to the surface. I've never seen anything like this before. I don't really understand how this works. I simply know that if I do the simple things the book tells me to do, this happens automatically, and resentments are replaced with love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill toward my fellow man. But it would do me no good to get rid of resentments if I didn't know how to keep them from coming back. Because the world is full of sick people, and they're going to do it to me again tomorrow. And if I'm not careful, I'll resent. And it seems as though I don't get just one. When I get one, let me play with it just a little bit, and then I've got two. And let me play with those two, and then I've got ten. And the next thing you know, I'm a basket case, and I'm sick all over again. I've got to do one more thing. Let's unfold those last two columns on your inventory sheet. And let's go to page 67. And we'll see if we can't find the information to fill out the last two columns.